campus of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, the Utah Debate Commission welcomes you to the 2nd Congressional District Candidates Debate.
Honored to be with you tonight at the invitation of the Utah Debate Commission to moderate the 2nd Congressional Debate. We are live on the campus of Southern Utah University in Cedar City for this exchange. Tonight, we will hear from the incumbent Republican Representative Chris Stewart and his Democratic challenger, State Senator Luz Robles. Each candidate receives a 2-minute opportunity for an opening statement. Prior to airtime, it was determined through a coin toss that Luz Robles would have that first opportunity. Senator Robles.
Thank you so much, and I want to personally thank Congressman Stewart for being here and for your time, the great hospitality of Southern Utah University. It's been a pleasure to be here in Cedar City and get to know so many of you students and faculty and administrators. Thank you for this opportunity. I also want to thank my husband for his support and my family, our children, one that's coming, that's been in the campaign trail the last couple of months, and it's just been a great honor to be able to participate in this process. And I'm here to tell you why I'm running for Congress, why I think it's so critical that we continue to see change in terms of what Congress is doing. I think we can do more. It's been enlightening to meet people in part of this congressional district that goes from Davis County all the way to St. George, Utah. It's a challenge. There's a lot of differences in the needs. And for me, it's been great to be able to put in practice what I've done in the state Senate for the last 6 years, being able to deal with issues related to rural Utah, as well as urban areas in the state. I'm excited and hopeful when I get to meet the many students in our K-12 institutions, as well as our higher education institutions. I'm hopeful for the future of this great nation, but I know we need to do more. We need to represent working families, making sure their voices are being represented in Congress. That's why I'm running today, because I get to work every single day at Science Bank, working with small businesses, helping them develop and start businesses. I get to be a mom, I get to be a wife, get to be a serving the state Senate, and I know I can bring more to Congress. And I know that if we have more voices of women, of minorities and others, working class Americans in our state Congress and in our US Congress, we can definitely do better. And that's why I'm here today running for Congress and also asking you for your support and to look at the options that you have and to address many of the issues that I know my opponent as well cares about. Thank you.
And now a 2-minute opening opportunity for Representative Chris Stewart.
Thank you. Ms. Robles, thank you as well for being here tonight and for all the others who have worked so hard to make this event possible. I look out in the audience and I see people who have become my friends over the last few years, and I want you to know what an honor it is for me to have the opportunity to represent you. My daughter was kind of teasing me. She said, "Dad, are you nervous about this debate tonight?" And I thought back on some of the things I'd done when I was flying jets in the Air Force and some other challenges in my life, and I said, "You know, I'm not too worried about this." But I'll tell you something that I am worried about and that all of us are anxious about, and that is the future and the direction of our country. How could you not be anxious about that when we see what's going on in the world around us? We're going to talk about a lot of things tonight, but I hope we talk about at least these three things. The first is this question: who is going to keep you safe? Because that is, after all, the fundamental responsibility of the federal government. And do you think that President Obama and other Democrats in Washington really understand the threat and have developed a strategy that's going to take care of that threat? The second thing is, who's going to create jobs and economic growth? Now, once again, the Democrats in Washington think they've done a fine job at that, but I think that's crazy. High unemployment, high taxes, terribly low economic growth. I know that we can do so much better. And then finally, I would say this. We can't go this night without talking about Obamacare and the disaster it's been for millions of hardworking American families. I believe in the American dream. I believe in the inherent goodness of the American people. I believe in the resilience of the US economy. But we can only protect those things if we're willing to fight for those things. That's the only reason I want to serve you in Congress. To preserve those things, we have to change some things in Washington, D.C. And that's why I'm asking for your support. I look forward to our conversation tonight. Thank you.
And for those of you at home, just so you know how this conversation will proceed this evening, the Utah Debate Commission has established a format that allows each candidate 90 seconds for an initial reply to a question. And these questions were actually drawn from voter input from the Utah and also from the Utah Debate Commission website. So we would like to also let you know that for each question, there will also be a rebuttal period that will last for 30 seconds each. And that brings us then to our first question, which goes to Senator Robles, and it is on education. This question actually comes from Joni Healy from Provo. And as a resident in that region of the state, I can tell you that this is one that is frequently spoken about. And as a parent, I can tell you that it is one that is commonly talked about within the school systems, and that is Common Core education. Common Core education, for those of you who are not familiar with it, refers to the federal standards that measure progress in every single grade. And her question is pretty simple, really, and it is it a good thing or is it a bad thing?
Thank you for the question, and I had a chance as a state senator to discuss Common Core standards in a lengthy manner, and it's, as you mentioned, a very controversial and divisive issue. But I think we need to go back to the history of where they came from, and that came from the National Governance Association and the Superintendents Association. They were the ones that decided to bring some standards to the table, and I do use the word standards versus curriculum, which we need to be clear with. And what they did is they set up some standards that will help kids that will move from one state to another, so they could help them assess them and make sure they were being placed in the correct grades in the school system when they were moving from one state to another. And I think the state of Utah has been very careful in, as a state legislature, to accept the Common Core standards, and they're being implemented across the state, but always allowing local school boards to have the final word when it comes to curriculum. And I think that's the key. As a state senator, I've always been very outspoken that when it comes to education, should be at the local level. I believe there is a role of the federal government, but it's limited when it comes to education, especially the K-12 piece. But when it comes to the standards, I don't see how that could hurt anybody. There is still a lot of discussion on whether the standards are perfect. I'm sure there's some modifications that we can make, but overall, I believe they're in the right, moving towards the right direction for our children.
Congressman Stewart.
Well, your question was, is it a good thing or a bad thing? And I think the answer is we don't know yet. And that's why this conversation and this debate is taking place, and I'm glad that it is. And maybe just a little background on me. I come from a family of educators. My father was an educator. I have two brothers and sisters educator, as is my wife. And my second son just had this amazing experience where he spent 2 years doing a program, Teach for America, where he taught in an inner city school. And I'm sympathetic to teachers and how hard their job is, how difficult it is. But we have this tradition in America, and it started really at Jamestown. It goes back to 1609, where we said every community, every town, every village will educate their own children. And I think that's exactly right. That's the way it should be. Those decisions, as Ms. Robles has said, and I agree with, they should be made at our local school board. And some of those decisions should be made at the state, but they should not be made at the federal level. And that's, I think, the suspicion or the caution that a lot of people feel about Common Core. They worry that it's an intrusion of federal government into standards or into curriculum that should be determined at the local level, at the very local level. And I understand this is controversial for some folks. We spent some time in St. George yesterday meeting with a group of educators, and even among them, including members of the school board, there is very obvious some varying opinions, and some fairly emotional conversations took place in some of these meetings. I understand that, and we appreciate that, and we hope those decisions continue to be made at the local level.
Senator Robles, your rebuttal?
Yeah, just to remind the audience that, again, these are standards, and I think that when I have the opportunity to speak with parents, just reminding them that it's not about the curriculum, that there's still, the school districts have that power to make that decision, but also that we are now in a very competitive global market. So when we speak about, making it local, we need to keep in mind that our children now are competing with people from all over the world. So making sure we are able to have our children at a certain standard in terms of their education level, I think is not gonna hurt them. I think it's actually gonna help them be more competitive.
Representative Stewart.
Well, rebuttal kind of indicates disagreement. In this case, we don't have a lot of disagreement. I would maybe just add this. My mother graduated from college in the early 1940s. She was one of about 2 or 3% of women who graduated from college at that time. She and my father set a great example to us. Education is so important. My children are continuing that. I have three children right now that are in various stages of advanced degrees. And all of us want our children to succeed. We recognize that education is a key to their success. We recognize we have to have standards to measure the success of that education. All of us support that.
Thank you. Our next question goes to Representative Stewart, and it comes from Larry Shepard in Farmington, and his question is about federal land. Management of wild horses on federal lands in the West, including a good portion of this very congressional district, has become a very sticky and contentious issue, with virtually no one on any side of this issue happy with the status quo. So how do we best manage the wild horse population and the multiple use of our public lands?
Well, it is an emotional issue, as it should be, because it's important to people in rural and southern parts of Utah, and frankly, it's important to people throughout Utah. I could have this conversation in Davis County, and they feel much the same. The question was specifically to wild horses, and here's the situation that we have. You know, I grew up on a farm. I grew up around animals. I love horses. I love riding horses. I can saddle my own horse. I don't have to have someone do that for me. And if you care about these animals, then you have to recognize that the situation right now is intolerable for them. BLM manages these. The federal government manages these wild horse herds. There's supposed to be about 26,500 of them. Right now, there's 55,000 of these animals, and they're destroying the range, and the bad thing is that leaves these animals to starve. Right now, within an hour, I could take you to a place and show you starving animals, starving horses, because the range just can't support them. The BLM's answer is very long term. It'll take 12 years to implement. And meanwhile, these horse herds are doubling every 4 to 5 years. We'll have 100,000 of them, then 200,000 of them. So the answer is this. We proposed to Neil Corsi, the BLM director, let the state manage those herds. He said, terrific. We would love that. We talked with the governor. The governor said, we will take that responsibility. We know that the state can manage herds like this. They manage our elk. They manage our deer. If you care about these animals like I do, then let us manage them. Let the state take responsibility for that, and we'll have a much, much better outcome than we're seeing right now.
Senator Luz Robles.
I agree with the congressman. It's been a conversation at the state legislature, and there is a role where there could be a partnership with the state government and the federal government to make sure we're taking care of these animals. And we all care for them. They're part of our backyard. I mean, that's one of the beauty of Utah, that we can have access to this amazing, you know, public land access and to see these beautiful animals, but we need to take care of them. I know there's been a lot of conversations, and some of them from our congressional delegation addressing those issues, and just looking forward to continue that conversation with them as well.
All right, since both of you seem to be somewhat in agreement on what we should do with the wild horses, let's drill down onto what should happen with our public lands. Is it a state issue, or does it become a federal issue, what we do with our national parks and our public lands? And we'll go first to you.
Okay. Is this a new question or a 30-second question?
Let's go ahead and give you 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds. Well, okay, in 30 seconds, there's this. No one is proposing that the state take over control of any of our national parks. No one has suggested that that's a good idea, and I don't think I would support that. Of course I wouldn't. But there is this presumption that people in Washington, D.C. care more about Utah than we do. They care more about the beautiful place that we live. There's a reason that we live here. It's because we love it here. Because you can walk out your back door and see the mountains and the deserts. We want to protect that. All of us do. But we are smart enough to do that. And the people in Utah care enough to do that. Let us manage these lands. I could show you bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. who are making decisions about Utah who have never set foot in our state. Why is that a good idea? Let us control these lands.
Senator Robles.
We may have to disagree on this one. I think there's some historical components to that. It has to do with, you know, there's constitutionality questions on whether this federal lands, who do they belong to? I think there's a shared responsibility, and also The purpose is really for us to manage those lands where we can exchange them when needed to make sure we're funding our school trust fund, which is critical. And it was one of the main purposes that we're there for, and we can do those exchanges. I think there's history where our former U.S. Senator Bennett and Congressman Matheson worked together in a bipartisan effort to address this issue. But I think we can be more responsible in the type of rhetoric we use, political rhetoric on this issue. I don't think it's us against them. It's more where we can make sure we protect our access to public lands, which makes Utah so attractive for tourism. And as you know, and we know as a state legislature, that our number one revenue maker when it comes to the state is tourism, is the outdoors industry, and all the employment that it brings to the state of Utah. I will be very concerned if we privatize that or just send it to the state where we don't have the resources to take care of them currently.
Our next question comes from John Wilkes of Murray, and he wants to have both of you address this particular question on gay marriage. The Supreme Court is expected to decide on whether states are required to recognize same-sex marriage. If they allow the states to decide their own policies, what would you recommend the state of Utah do on same-sex marriage? Senator Robles.
You know, I've been on the record with regards to this issue. I think it's an issue of equality. And, you know, there's history in our nation that we've moved towards making sure every human being in this country is seen as one, and one human being, and be respected for that. I don't see why people should limit access to what other peoples have just based on their sexual orientation. At the same time, we are in the middle of a judicial process, and, you know, there's a lawsuit in place, and there's been a lot of conversations. I know the Attorney General's office is really busy right now with that, but I will continue to support equality for all Utahns. And in this case, I think it will come down to the Supreme Court decision that will definitely make a change in the way we as a nation recognize the ability of individuals to be with their loved ones if they want to and not have government interfere with that.
Representative Stewart.
Well, you know, I think all of us would agree that we want to treat each of us with respect. We want to treat each other fairly. I believe that we are all children of the same God and that we are required by the laws of just nature to treat each other with the dignity that I think that fact would require. But I also believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. That is my moral teaching, that is my faith teaching, and I don't know how I could possibly turn my back on that. I also believe there's another element to that, and that is I think the states have this prerogative to let them decide. If certain states would decide differently than Utah would, I would accept that. But I think that we need to exercise our prerogative to decide this as we would. And the people of Utah have spoken on this, and I think we need to respect that. But once again, let's do it in a respectful manner. Let's treat each other fairly. Let's recognize that we're all individuals. And I think if we use those as a guidelines for guiding these conversations, it would be very helpful for all of us.
Senator Robles, your 30-second rebuttal.
I think it's important that we get, you know, it reminded that these are families we're talking about. And I know people have different opinions with regards to marriage, but at the end of the day, we are talking about human beings and children that belong to those families. And I know many of them are hurting. And when it comes to what the role of the federal government could be, in 1968, Congress passed and the president signed into law the Civil Rights Act, protecting the rights of people of color. So it's not new for in our history, in our country, to make sure we protect the rights of individuals that are being violated by that at that time in history.
And your rebuttal?
Well, again, I don't know that I would say anything differently than I said before. We expect and hope that each of us would treat each other with great respect and with dignity. But there is this grand institution of marriage, which has been recognized across cultures, across religions, for thousands of years. It was recognized that through this institution of marriage, that we protect our children, that we educate our children, that we provide them with a basis so that they can build happy lives. This would be a dramatic change in the definition of marriage that has endured now for, again, thousands of years. I just don't know that it's a right choice for this state. The people have spoken, and I think we should respect that.
And our next question is on immigration. It comes from Dave Neely in Provo. And he says, recent surveys show more than 100,000 illegal immigrants live here in Utah. Many believe our immigration system is indeed broken. What do you see as the biggest problem with our immigration system, and how would you fix it?
Well, that's actually a fairly easy answer. And look, to say the immigration is broken, that's clearly the case. And frankly, lots of things in Washington, D.C. are broken. Immigration isn't the only one, yet it's the one we hear referred to most often. We are a nation of immigrants. I think of the Statue of Liberty and showing the broken chains at her feet and that wonderful poem that we all know that goes with that. Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We built the greatest nation in the world on the hard work of people who wanted to come here and wanted to be part of that, wanted to breathe free. But they did it in an environment of legality. And that's not what we have now. The biggest problem is very clearly this. It is securing our borders. What we're seeing with unaccompanied minors on our southern border right now, it's criminal. It's terrible to see what it's doing to those children. It's not good for their families. It's not good for our country. And there's bipartisan support for many parts of immigration, but I don't know how you could argue that it doesn't have to start with securing our borders. A nation has to be able to protect its sovereignty. Now, once you've done that, you can talk about H-1A visas or H-1-2 visas, or you can talk about implementing some of the E-Verify and other things. Make it more efficient. Make it more friendly. Last thing I'd say on this, is, and I think this is so important to notice, if the president does what he's threatened to do, and that's to move forward in what I believe is an unconstitutional manner and say, I will do this myself, it will shatter that trust between the American people. It will shatter that trust between the Congress and the president, and there will be no reform. I hope the president doesn't do that because it will stop the conversation when many of us want the conversation to go forward.
Senator Luz Robles, your question on immigration.
Well, you know, it's true that Congress hasn't acted in the last, I would say, 40 years. It's really their incompetency, and it's sad because this is a public policy issue. And it's a very easy issue to make sure we rally groups of people, bring fear to their communities. The reality is it will require many issues, and it needs to be in a comprehensive way. We've tried the Band-Aid solutions of having one little change here and another one over here. It's not working because things need to happen simultaneously. But their lack of work and their lack of action had pushed states to move forward with unconstitutional laws, and there's a lot of lawsuits taking place because of that. The state of Utah actually decided to show the federal government how to do business, and we came up with our own immigration reform bill. We're still dealing with court issues on this issue, but we wanted to show D.C. and Washington how we can do this in the most conservative state in the nation. And our bill was very proactive. It allowed to have all of the components, some of them mentioned by the congressman, which has to do with public safety. In our case, will be border, you know, the border security, which I agree with him is critical. But you also have to address the 11 million that are here that have U.S. citizen children. They may be married to U.S. citizens, and they're working. They're part of our communities. They're already in our system. They should be a pathway to citizenship. It doesn't mean we want amnesty. There's a big difference with amnesty. And it's very hard when people just get stuck on those words, and they don't want to really get into the policy and the solution of the issue. You also have issues related to workforce demand. We don't have immigration, whether it's legal or illegal, because of jobs, because people need that workforce. So we need to address all of them simultaneously in order to have good public policy in place.
Representative Stewart, your 30-second rebuttal.
Well, once again, just to reemphasize, it has to start with border security. I was the vice chairman of the subcommittee that wrote the border security bill. It's a great bill. It would take care of the problem. And the problem that we got from the Senate was they sent us this massive bill. It was thousands of pages long. No one could understand it. And it was this a little bit of approach like Obamacare. It was this enormous fix that was so complicated. And I think the House has taken a much better approach on this. Let's secure the borders first. Then let's take a piecemeal approach, simple bills, bills that we understand what they're going to do, bills that we can build bipartisan support for. We can do that. We know we can do that. We've got bipartisan support for many of these things. I just think it's a much more reasonable approach to how we can deal with this problem.
Senator Robles.
I just think it's long due, and I'm not sure what else they need, you know, Congress. And I'm not blaming one specific political party. It's just devastating, and it's devastating for the states. I mean, we have to pay the bills on many of their lack of enforcement, lack of, work towards bringing real policy. And then you have children that are being impacted as well. So I'm, at this point, I really, one of the reasons why I'm running is to make sure that we can have good public policy being passed in Congress, because I'm not sure what else they're doing when they can't fix this issue.
All right. For the next three questions, we are going to take a slightly different approach. And we are going to give each candidate 30 seconds. There will be no rebuttal time. This is in an effort to get to know each of you a little bit better. And Senator Robles, we will start with you. What personal attributes or life experiences make you best prepared to be the candidate to represent Utah's congressional district?
You know, I think one of them is just the fact that I have legislative experience. It may be at the state level, but you know what? It's critical. And I've learned to work in a bipartisan effort. If you are a Democrat in Utah and you want to make things happen, you have to learn to work with members of the different, you know, the opposite party. And I've been very effective as a senator. I'm looking forward to bringing that as well to Congress. I'm also part of the working class America, and I think we need more of those in Congress.
Representative Stewart, what makes you the candidate?
Are you suggesting I run for Senate? Is that what you're...
I think you can only run for one office
okay.
at a time.
We'll
I think
stay
some
with
rules
this. I'm very
that.
Happy here. I grew up on a family of 10 kids milking cows. My father got out of the Air Force and bought this farm, and he told us, I want to teach you how to work. I think that's the greatest personal attribute that I have. But my life experience matters as well. I served 14 years as a pilot in the Air Force. We're making important national security decisions now. Only a tiny percentage of Congress has any military experience. They need to hear my voice. I was a business owner and CEO for 12 years. 60% of the jobs created in the last 30 years come from small business. They need to hear my voice and my experience on that. Finally, as some of you know, I've spent many years writing books. And throughout all of them, there's this theme of American exceptionalism, faith and hope in our future, faith in our country and the goodness of our country. Again, I think that's a perspective that's valuable and needs to be heard as well.
All right. I would like to remind both candidates to be mindful of the clock that is at your feet. Thank you very much. Second question in this volley round goes to Senator Robles. Voter apathy is partly the reason why the Utah Debate Commission was created. We are trying to, as a state, generate more interest in this process and get more people to the polls. In particular, if you will look behind me, the students that you see present this evening, they are underrepresented at the polls in general. So how do you tackle voter apathy? How do you get people engaged in this process?
Thanks for that question. And really, that's been what this campaign has been about. In our case, it's been a grassroots campaign of talking to voters, talking to young people, the 18 to 25, which was my target initially from when we started this race, is really we wanted to make sure younger people in Utah, which is a large part of our population, were participating. We're expecting less than 30% voting participation on this midterm election, and it's sad to think that a small amount of individuals will be determining who our leaders and representatives are for our state. So for us, we need to make sure that conversation continues and target that 18 to 25 for sure.
Representative Stewart.
Well, once again, that's one of the reasons we're grateful for this opportunity to be here tonight, because it will increase voter interest and it will increase exposure and help voters be more aware. It's a difficult thing to do, but I think if we could do one thing that would help it, it would be this. Help people understand that you matter. Help people understand that you can change things. That this isn't just some machine that's on autopilot and there's nothing that you can do to affect the outcome. If people really believed that my vote mattered or that my voice mattered and that I can go in there and change things, I can promise you, as your representative, we listen to you. We listen to your phone calls. We answer your letters. If people realize that, then they, I think, would be much more inclined to be involved and much more inclined to vote.
All right. The next question I'm directing at you, Representative Stewart. And it is a little bit of a tricky question for both of you in that I am asking you, what would you like to ask Senator Robles?
Wow. Congratulations on your baby. Do you know if it's a boy or a girl?
It's a girl. It's a girl.
It's a girl. And I'm going to leave it at that one, if that's okay.
All right. Senator Robles.
To me, it's more of where do you see the role of the federal government for the residents of the state of Utah?
Yeah.
You know, just overall, the federal government, and is it important to have the federal government in place?
Yeah.
All right, thank you both for tolerating that volley. And we are now at the midpoint tonight, and I do want to welcome once again all of you to this live debate between candidates for the 2nd Congressional District. We are on the campus of Southern Utah University, and this is, by the way, a landmark event in voter information, with the media joining together with a citizen-based initiative to provide statewide debate coverage for Utah's federal and statewide offices. And tonight's questions are again drawn from those submitted to the Utah Debate Commission at their website, which I would encourage you to go look up. It's utahdebatecommission.org, and we do invite you to be a part of this process by providing questions that you would like to see answered at future debates. Also, the website has the schedule for all of the upcoming debates, and you can also look up the debates that have already happened. They are available on demand. And now, back to our exchange. And let's see, who's on first? Let's see, question number 6. If I could get help from the control room, that would be helpful. Okay, we are going back to you, Senator Robles. This is what happens when we ping pong. All right, so the question is about the future of this country. And it comes from Ashley Crowley. And she is a college student. And she wants to know, as a student, I care about the future of my generation and what we will be inheriting. What do you intend to do to ensure that my generation will have opportunities for success and the overall pursuit of happiness in a strong America?
Thank you. What a great question, and inspiring coming from, obviously, someone that's young and in college. And like I said, for me, going to schools is what gives me hope. I feel good, actually, about my Social Security, believe it or not, because I see brilliant minds going to our higher education institution as well as our K-12 institutions. And really, it's about we need to make sure we're taking care of our environment. I think, you know, air quality, obviously, is an issue here in our state, especially in the Wasatch Front area. Now that we're entering into a new conflict, we need to be responsible of how we interact with other countries and how we secure our own Americans, not only here in the United States, but abroad. So all of those components, as well as renewable energy. I mean, we need to start talking of how life is going to look 20, 40 years from now. And we need to secure the welfare and the well-being of those generations, the children of that college student that emailed that question. And I think we need responsible, you know, leaders in our country that are, you know, planning ahead. And those plans need to respond to 5 to 10, 15 to 20 years ahead. I'm concerned about climate change. I'm concerned about my kids and what's going to happen to them if we continue to destroy our environment the way we're doing it at the pace we're doing. I'm also concerned of conflicts and terrorism and hatred. And I'm hoping that, you know, by having more responsible people making those decisions, we can have a better, not only a better America, but a better world for all of us.
And what would you say to Ashley?
Well, there's good news and bad news, Ashley. I mean, the bad news is what you're going to inherit right now is something more than $18 trillion in debt. You're inheriting a chaotic world that's full of danger. You're inheriting a slow economy, and where jobs are scarce and hard to find. And you're inheriting what I think is unfortunate, maybe the most unfortunate thing, and that is people that are worried about their future. But I promise you, and this is the good news, it doesn't have to be that way. We can change every one of those things. We can change and put them on the right path. And let me focus just on one element of that, and that's the economy. And this American dream that's been such a reality in our world for generations. As I mentioned, I was a businessman. I know what it takes to create a job. I've actually created jobs. And I also understand that the government doesn't help. In many cases, the government makes it much, much harder. So I would propose two or three things that would make it easier for you and give you hope in your future. One of them is this. Americans are the hardest working people in the world. Let's let them keep more of the money that they make. Let's let them keep that to invest it, to create more jobs, to create more economic opportunity for people. Let's take care of the government regulation. It's something like $1.6 to $1.8 trillion dead weight on our economy. It creates so much uncertainty in our future. If we could make people feel like government wasn't the problem, but the government was getting out of the way, you would have so much more to look forward to. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do in my efforts here.
Senator Robles.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the things I would like to address is our fairness in the process of wealth distribution. I mean, I work with businesses every single day as a vice president for Science Bank. I've worked with very small businesses. Some of them are here. Some of those business owners are friends of mine. And I think it's critical that we bring fairness to the way we bring our taxation process. And I think there's more that we can do, some of them at the federal level, some of them at the state level. But I think, you know, we need to also allow our students to have access to student loans. When I hear some of the, you know, our congressmen or congresswomen talking about removing that as an opportunity for our students, that's petrifying. So when we are talking about the role of government, I think for individuals like the student that was emailing, having access to programs that really help them succeed is also important. And making sure there's fairness in the process, we distribute our wealth as well.
All right. And Representative Stewart.
And this is one thing that I would respectfully disagree with Ms. Robles on, and that is redistribution of wealth. If we're robbing Peter to pay Paul, I don't think that that is the American dream. I don't think that's the American tradition. I think it's much better for us to create opportunities for both of them. The answer isn't to take some money from some people and to give it to other people. The answer is to create an economy, as I said earlier, that's growing, that's creating jobs, that gives opportunities for advancement for everyone. That's the thing that I think would help most of us, and the thing that most of us would agree would that we should be trying to do.
Representatives. Stewart, you have the next question, which was actually formulated by members of the debate commission, and they would like to know about foreign policy. There are many hotspots, as everyone is aware, in our world right now. We have Syria, Iraq, and the Ukraine all posing serious threats to national security at this time. What role does the United States have in intervening internationally?
The U.S. has an enormously important role, and it has for generations. And that is just the reality. Some of us resist that. We don't want that role. But the reality is that we must. Once again, I was an Air Force pilot for 14 years. I spent almost 20 days in the Middle East in June. And we met with presidents and prime ministers and kings. And the thing we heard from every one of them was, where is the United States? We don't know if we can count on you. And we can't ignore the threat that ISIL is. I mean, it'd be great if we could just say, well, that's happening over there, but it won't affect us over here. But it will. It has already. It certainly will. They're collecting something like at least $1 billion, perhaps $3 billion a year in revenue. They are creating a terrorist caliphate. Now, there's things we could do that would affect that, and we should do. And I'm glad that finally the president is. The first thing we can do is attack their oil reserves, which are funding them. That's an easy military target. Second thing is, I was an Air Force pilot. Again, I know the power of air power. And we're seeing that now. That can be an enormously effective weapon to destroy this very, very evil organization. We need to remember that special forces, we've already got boots on the ground. The president says we're not going to do that. We already do. We've got something like 1,600 special forces over there now. They can be very effective. And finally, our allies. The Iraqis will fight them now. The Peshmerga will as well. Some of the Jordanians will. They will be the boots on the ground that will do that very, you know, that very brutal mission that they have. But we absolutely have to support them.
And Senator Robles, the same question to you.
You know, I think the president has been very outspoken, and I'm glad to hear him be strong on the fact that we need to strike back and protect not only our own land and homeland, but also our interests abroad. And yeah, the U.S. is a very powerful nation, and we are leaders in this world, and we need to be on the forefront of protecting anybody that's being subjected to the terrorism of groups like the ones mentioned before, and I'm glad that it's happening. We also have to be very, very responsible on how much more we put into our armed forces of work, how much we can put into our own economy. I mean, think about the budget and what we spend with our military. And when we talk about trying to balance a budget, when we talk about $1 trillion deficits, to think that we're now going to get into this other massive process without being responsible and fiscally responsible and analyzing how much we can take, I don't think is the right approach. We need to be very careful. I'm glad that it's moving towards the right direction. I'm obviously not privy to many of the information that I'm sure the congressman has access to, but I think just from what I'm reading and listening to through the media, our president and Congress are acting the right way, but I will be very making sure that we're very careful not to put more strain on our military forces and our budgets when it comes to, you know, entering into more action as a nation.
Representative Stewart, you have 30 seconds.
Ms. Robles, I appreciate your comments about the military and agree with you. As a military officer myself, many of my brothers, many of my nephews now, I understand that we have wore out our military. We've asked them to do very difficult things over the last 13 years, and we're asking them to do something difficult once again. And I know that they'll do that. They'll be professional and they'll accomplish the mission. One other thing I would mention just very quickly, and that is it's unfortunate but true that we are reaping the outcome from a failed foreign policy. The president talked about leading from behind. He failed to negotiate the status of forces agreement in Iraq. If we had left those 10 to 12,000 soldiers there that the military commanders were insisting that we do, we would not have the situation where ISIS has spread from eastern Syria into northern Iraq. We'd be in a very different situation right now if that had been the case.
Senator Robles.
You know, I think there is some truth of what the congressman mentioned, but at the same time, as a nation, we have not been responsible with our veterans. So I think it's hard sometimes for us to continue to ask them to do all this stuff with the limited resources we're providing. Look what happened with Veterans Affairs. Their limited access to mental health, to help in terms of them reintegrating back to society. I've been very lucky to pass two pieces of legislation, one a constitutional amendment to help our veterans as a state senator, but that's because our federal government hasn't done their job, so we need to be very careful if we're going to move forward to asking them for more work.
Senator Robles, the next question comes from Sylvia King from Salt Lake City, Utah, and she wants to know about renewable energy. She says, do you believe that a rapid conversion to renewable energy would benefit the United States economy, and if so, why? And what will you do to promote such a conversion?
That's a great question, and I think it has to do with our homeland security as well. We depend so much on foreign nations when it comes to our energy and the way we live as a nation. If we move towards a more aggressive renewable energy nation and actually be in the forefront of that, I think we could have a more secure United States of America where we don't depend on the Middle East, for example, when it comes to oil. So for me, it's critical that that's in the forefront of the agenda of Congress. I think it will also create jobs. It's a good economic development piece, and it's a good way of taking care of our environment as well. So it's responsible in so many ways, and I'm looking forward to being a participant in that conversation.
Representative Stewart, same question.
Well, I think all of us love the idea of renewable energy. There's a place in my district here in the 2nd Congressional District where you can climb these 330-foot wind turbines, and I climbed them and stood on top of those. And from there, you can look and see a geothermal plant, you can see a proposed solar project, and you can see the more traditional carbon of oil wells. And that's what it's going to take. It can't be just one, and it can't be the other. It's going to take both of them. And I think all of us would support if the technologies that emerge, and we want those to emerge. We want to have renewables. We want to have a cleaner environment. But in the interim, we have to recognize that there is a very important piece, and that is for the traditional oil that energy we get from oil and from gas. And it's also a very important part of our state's economy. We can create so many jobs, good paying jobs, if we're willing to take advantage of some of the resources that have been given to us. And like Ms. Robles said, again, agreeing with her on that, it directly affects our national security. We'd be in a very different world right now if it weren't for fracking and the success that we've had there in the U.S. producing oil. Because you can imagine with the chaos in the Middle East right now, we'd be paying $5 or $6 a gallon for gasoline were it not for that. So let's support all of them, but let's do it in a responsible way. And let's recognize that some of these technologies may not be ready right now. So in the interim, let's continue to use and exploit the resources that we do have in oil and gas.
Senator Robles.
I agree that this will be on an incremental steps. I don't see this happening overnight, but I will certainly look forward to have Congress be more aggressive when it comes to bringing policy where, as a nation, we unite and put resources, whether it is research and development when it comes to renewable energy, and I think that's what we're asking for. Not that it's going to change overnight and that we're going to disappear industries overnight, but we need to be more responsible and be more aggressive in that area.
And?
Well, again, I think many of us would support this. I think it's far better done when it's done in the private sector and when it's done through market forces than when it's done through the force of government. If the government can do something like this that would benefit it, I would support that, but I don't want to spend, like we did, $580 million for Solyndra, tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars for other companies where the government was choosing winners and losers. That's not the role of the government. Who is it in the government that is smart enough that can, they can go out and scan the economy and say these are the right technologies and those are the wrong ones? That's best done with these thousands of individual choices that take place every day as the market works, as the market kind of filters and said these are the technologies that are most promising.
All right, the next question goes to you, Representative Stewart. It's about the federal deficit. And this question also comes from the Utah Debate Commission's committee. And the question is, the U.S. debt continues to rise. While this problem seems very complex, others say the solution is deceptively simple, that we can either cut spending, raise taxes, or do some combination of the two. So which of these choices would you pursue if you are selected to represent this district for the next 2 years?
You know, this is the primary reason that I decided to run for Congress 2 years ago. I looked at our spending and our debt, and I concluded we're committing national suicide by allowing this thing to grow the way it is. There were years in a row there, early in the Obama administration, that we had $1.4 trillion annual deficits. As I mentioned earlier, in this president, we've gone from $10.5 trillion in debt to approaching $18 trillion. We'll be at $20 trillion before any of us can blink our eyes, it seems. And there's a real economic cost to that. You have to recognize that there's a real economic cost to that. You don't just print money and go merrily on your way as if it doesn't matter. So the question is, how do we fix it? And I think the answer is actually fairly straightforward. You can fix this by growing the economy. And you want evidence of that? Look at this year. Early in January, the deficit was projected to be about $850 billion. But as the economy grew even just a few tenths of a percent, that projection in our deficit came from $850 down to about $550 billion. We didn't have any tax increases. We didn't have any other meaningful changes in the monetary policy or in fiscal policies out of Washington, D.C. We simply grew the economy. And that's, I think, the first option, and it's the most obvious choice for us. Now, there may be some other things we can do in cutting spending in a targeted way. I'd certainly support that. But let's encourage policies that will grow us, because that's what's going to really make the difference on this very significant problem.
Senator Robles.
Thank you. And of course, fixing the debt, I think it's a conversation that should be taking place everywhere in this nation. It is a crisis. The numbers are clear. And what has been interesting in the last couple of years, I participated in it with a group called Fix the Debt, and it's a bipartisan group. We actually visited several members of our congressional delegation addressing this issue, and we were asking for a combination of, entitlement reductions or assessment of our entitlement programs, as well as making sure we review our revenue enhancement programs and how much are we taxing. Again, going back to who is being taxed and how much we're providing for specific industries versus other industries to succeed. So when we talk about creating jobs, we have to be also proactive in making sure there's fairness in that process. And we are allowing that help to go to all the industries at the same time, not only specific industries. With regards to the debt, every state in the nation went through a process during our recession of balancing a budget. We had no choice. And I don't know why Congress hasn't been able to balance budget. And that exercise needs to happen in an organized, orderly fashion. And here in Utah, we were able to do it. We had to make some very tough decisions, use part of our rainy funds, make sure we cut here and there. And those cuts were painful, but we did it together in a bipartisan effort. I think the gridlock in Washington is not helping, but I'll tell you what, there's hope. This Affordable Care Act, for example, we just saw some of those outcomes here in Utah. 30% reduction of usage of emergency rooms, that story came out today. So that's important, we're moving towards that, but it takes real reform to make that happen.
Representatives.
Well, just maybe a couple thoughts. There is one party in Washington, D.C. who would like to balance a budget, and I have voted twice now for budgets that would balance. And the Republicans in the House are serious about doing that, but we can't do it by ourselves. And unfortunately, there are many Democrats who don't support us in that effort, and I wish that they would. And the second thing I would say is that a lot of times people's primary response is, well, we've got to increase taxes. And I would remind us that just over 2 years ago, we had one of the largest tax increases in history, and it hit every one of us who work. $840 billion tax increase as a result of the fiscal cliff negotiations. And the answer isn't to go back to the people and ask for more and more of your money. The answer, once again, is to grow the economy and then to cut spending in a reasonable way. We do those things, and we can balance our budget as the budgets that I have voted for hope to do.
And you'll rip it off.
I'm concerned when we get the government shuts down just because, again, our Congress can't get their act together, and we're dealing with businesses closing. Here in the state of Utah, we have to pay out of our own pocket as a state government to make sure we keep our national monuments, and great parks moving forward, because we had a lot of our community and local individuals that live out of those businesses, and that's our economy. And so I'm not sure that right now our Congress understands how critical this is, and if they do, they should do something about it, and we need more people that could just take that approach, not going for a break, or get, maybe they should cut their own salaries and start working towards fixing the debt, or not get paid until they actually balance a budget. I mean, I think those type of actions may actually motivate them to do their job for a change.
All right, we have one final question this evening, and we are going to give you each 30 seconds on this particular question due to lack of time. And this question is on the diversity of the 2nd Congressional District, actually. It says the Utah 2nd District is unique among congressional districts in this country because it includes citizens who live in highly urbanized areas along the Wasatch Front, as well as those who live in our rural communities and wide open spaces in Utah. How will you effectively represent both the urban and the rural portions of the 2nd District citizens? The first question goes to you.
I think it takes visiting those communities and being part and participating. I had a chance to now, in this campaign process, to visit a lot of rural areas. And it's true, it's different. And it's very diverse. And I'm sure my understanding is the congressman lives in Farmington, Davis County. I live in Salt Lake County, in Salt Lake City. So we're obviously coming from a very different perspective than it's what's taking place here in Iron County or other of the 13 counties that are represented in this district. So we need to be more proactive in meeting them and interacting with them.
And
it's a difficult question in 30 seconds, but I'll do it as quickly as I can. One is recognizing that we do have great diversity in our district, and I'm actually proud of that. I think it makes it one of the reasons this district is the jewel of the state. The second thing is to recognize that not all people are going to agree with me, that I represent some principles and some values that they see differently than I do. But I think we can counter that by helping them understand that we will always listen to you. We'll always make ourselves available to you. Of the thousands of letters that we've responded to, the thousands of meetings that we had, we want people to know, agree or disagree, I am your congressman. I'm proud to represent you. We will listen to you.
Our time is up, and we are going to now move on to closing statements. Sure. And due to the coin toss, you are first. Representative Stewart.
Well, again, thank you to all of those who worked and made this possible, to my opponent, Ms. Robles, to my wife and daughter who are sitting in the back. They sacrificed so much in order for me to do this. I believe my parents taught me a principle, and I have come to accept that through my own life. The Spirit of God is a spirit of freedom. That is the battle that we're engaged in today. Will we protect our freedoms in a dangerous and chaotic world? Will we protect our freedoms from a federal government that doesn't want to help us, but that many times wants to rule over us? Will we protect our freedoms so we can give our children the American dream? Abraham Lincoln said, "We are the last best hope on earth." That was true when he said it. It is still true today. If we remain engaged in this conversation and in this battle for freedom, it will be true, and our children will teach that to their children as well. God bless you all. God bless the United States of America.
Senator Robles, your closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you to the Debate Commission for the opportunity to be here with all of you, and again, SUU for opening your doors. Thank you, Congressman Stewart, and your family, because it's true, public service is hard. And I appreciate and respect everyone that puts their name in the ballot and puts their families and themselves out there. I think it's time that we continue to seek that American dream. I came here to this country looking for that dream, and I know it's alive. And I want to make sure my kids have the same opportunities I had 18 years ago when I came to America. And I think this is a great opportunity to make sure we represent the different voices, not only of Utah, but our nation. And our federal government plays a very critical role in our lives, and I think there is a space for us to make it better. So with that, I'm just asking for their support and to make sure to get out to vote on November 4th.
All right, my thanks to both of you, and we would like to now let all of you know that we appreciate you being with us this evening. We would like to acknowledge also the administration and the faculty and students of Southern Utah University for providing such an excellent setting for the second debate of the 2014 election season. The Utah Debate Commission reminds you that the next debate is actually on October 1st. It's at 6 o'clock. That one will be held at Brigham Young University, and it features the candidates who are running for the office of Utah Attorney General. Now, if you would like to attend, or if you do have questions for consideration, visit the Utah Debate Commission website at utahdebatecommission.org, and it has truly been a pleasure for me and an honor to be with you tonight. It is my hope that regardless of which side you stand on politically, that you will recognize the importance of your critical role in this process. On November 4th, raise your voice. I challenge you to go to the polls. Make your voice heard through your action of voting for the candidates of your choice. In Cedar City, I'm Barb Smith. I hope you have a great evening.